Welcome to the George Lynch Hunting Podcast Show. We're all about the facts, experience, with a little bit of humor thrown in there. We are honored to have this week's guest, Brooke Richard from Higgin Decoys. Brooke, welcome to our podcast, bud.
Thanks for having me, Mr. George.
You know, we have known each other for quite some time, and I will say, the first time I met you, Brooke, I was totally impressed of how mature you were in such your younger years, a young man, and how professional, and everything was yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and thank you, sir. So I could tell that you came from, definitely had to be the Deep South, and definitely with the Southern hospitality mentality, but great manners. And so for our listeners out there, Brooke, can you give us a little background of your personal life and then your business life?
Sure. So just to touch on why I am who I am, that was an acquired skill set, as I would call it. My parents like to call it the leather treatment. I was not born this way. I earned that because I'm wild and I made a lot of mistakes as a kid. My parents kept me in line. So they're the ones that really made me this way, not me. I had to learn the hard way. It would have been a whole lot more fun if I had just figured it out earlier on. But yeah, I get that from a lot of people, and honestly, it's the only way to be. My parents raised me right. I'd like to think they did a good job with what wild child they were given. So that's, you know, opposites attract, but people who have respect for each other, and like you and I, George, it's those things attract too. And from a very, very early on in our friendship, you and I always saw eye to eye on that. We treat people the way we want to be treated, and it's a good thing. But anyway, enough of that. My name's Brooke Richard. I work here at Higdon Outdoors. And I'm the director of marketing. Like to duck call, like to spec call, like to hunt, host our TV show, Higdon Outdoors TV, wear a lot of hats here at the office, but probably my best achievement in this industry is making a lot of really good friends with folks like you, Mr. George.
Well, I appreciate that, buddy. It seems like when I first met you, weren't you in the oil business or getting reserving oil rights or something like that?
Yeah, so originally I'm from Lafayette, Louisiana, and as you can imagine, the oil industry is pretty big down there. So whenever I was in college, I took an internship, and I was doing petroleum landman work. I was doing title research in courthouses and doing oil and gas leasing with landowners on behalf of oil production companies. And at the time, I guess that was, you know, between 2010 and 2013, fracking was a big deal in Ohio, Pennsylvania. So I was actually up there living near Pittsburgh for about a year, and I was up there, and that's what actually got me to meet you. Is I looked at callingducks.com, saw there was a calling contest in Point Mulet, Michigan, and went over there to call in a contest, and lucky enough, I actually won it. It was the 2013 Northern International Duck Calling Championship, qualified me for Stuttgart, and I met a lot of really cool people, but probably one of the coolest ones I met was you, because I never got to do a lot of Canada goose hunting. Being from South Louisiana, we just don't have them. And you were like, hey, just, you know, come over to the house. We've got a lot of mutual friends. Seem like a good guy. We're going to go shoot some Canada geese in my backyard tomorrow. Show
right
up.
Behind the shop.
I showed up. Right behind the shop. You showed me the shop. And then at 4 in the morning, we walked out there, drug a few layout blinds out there, set up a couple dozen decoys. And you said, I'll tell you when to shoot. Just hang out. And, you know, at the time, I'd done a lot of hunting, but honestly, I could count on one hand at that time how many times I've actually gone after a Canada geese. And we sat there, and you knew it like it was your backyard. You said, oh, they're going to come from over here. They're going to fly out here. I'll call. They'll swing around, and then we'll shoot them. Yeah. And, you know, within about 10 minutes, that happened. And it was really cool. I got to hunt with your dog. It was that Chessie that you had. I forget his name, but he was awesome.
Buck the Wonder Dog.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then that was the morning of the contest. And then we, you know, we shot a handful, and we had to get out of there early, so they didn't really fly. I believe it was foggy, if I remember right.
Yeah,
and they just kind of sat tight, and we got up, and you said, hey, yeah, you know, no big deal. We got to the show, and you had your booth set up. I got to meet a bunch of your great pro staff guys, and a funny story. I didn't own a Canada goose call. Why would I, you know, at that time? Just no reason to. You gave me a goose call, and I still have it to this day. It's in my safe. And it's a black goose call. It's got goose feet engraved on the insert. I don't remember the name of it, but you gave it to me. I blew in the duck calling contest and had some success. And then there was the one and only Canada goose contest I ever blew in. There was a contest. It was the Michigan Novice Canada Goose Calling Contest. and two people signed up. And you looked at me and said, Brooke, you got a goose call. And I couldn't blow a goose call to save my life. You said, Brooke, you got a goose call. Just sign up. You're going to get a plaque. You get third place. And, you know, I didn't care, you know. And so I signed up. And I'll be dang, somebody signed up right after me. So there was four people. And actually, after the first round, I was in third place because someone messed up. And then it was only a two-round contest. And I didn't get a plaque in a goose calling contest by 1 point. But I blew in a can of goose calling contest. I gave them 10 seconds of fury because that's all I could do. And then I almost got a plaque. But to this day, I can say I blew in a can of goose calling contest, and I was 1 point away from placing. So I have no one to thank but you for that.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, my friend. That is a lot that describes about your personality. I mean, I played sports a lot in my life, and it's always about being competitive. And that is was, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's either born in you or not. And, you know, you take that same initiative as you did in business into hunting and into calling. I mean, dude, there's guys who've been blowing Canada goose call for a couple of years that I try to get into competition. They'll just, no, I can't. And you're like, all right, man, I'll jump in. And that is the difference in guys who, you know, who succeed and those who don't. And it's, you know, if you fail, that's one of the things I always talk about is, man, don't worry about failure. Failures is what makes successes. You know, learning from those failures.
That's right.
Is awesome.
You know, winners are just losers who tried one more time. And if anybody's followed my duck calling career, you know, I carry a really cool title. You know, I've got two-man world live duck title, so technically I'm a world champion duck caller. But, you know, that's awesome. But I've got one. And I've called in over 100 contests in multiple species. I actually hold the record for most second place finishes in 1 year for sanctioned duck calling contests. I got 9 second place finishes. I think it's nine. And if anybody knows, you've got to get first place to qualify for world championship duck calling contest in Stuttgart. That year, I never did it. I got second place in 9 contests. And after the 9th one, there was just no more contests to go to. I had gone as many as I could, and it was getting close, and there was just no more contests. So that taught me a lot. But if you follow my calling contest career, I've got a pile of third and second places and a very few amount of first place finishes, but I don't care. It's not all about winning. It's about being competitive, and I want to do well. But, you know, in this industry and in this activity of calling, it's the ride is really the trophy.
Well, the misconception, I think, of all the years of judging contests, and I've judged you in many of the contests, is that people think that, you know, the calling contest is, you know, it's a different aspect, different sport, but you know, your love, number one, is hunting, and blowing in contest and practicing contest just makes you more efficient on that instrument that you're using. And that's what drives you to the contest is your love for hunting. It is what, you know, for me and I believe for a lot of the guys, you know, you hear the misconception, I think, all the time out there. Well, he's a contest caller. I bet he's not a good hunter or a good caller. And, you know, that's bull. I mean, those guys, a lot of these guys, not everyone, but majority, I mean, you look at some of the good guys, Corey Nickham, his brother Jody, and a lot of the guys out there, they shiny. I mean, these guys, they do great on the stage, but they're hunters number one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I get asked that a lot, and of course, you know, I'm 30 years old, Mr. George, and I've been doing this as in contest calling since I was 15, 16. You know, I got into it pretty late, you know, respectively, and I get that all the time, you know, whether it's, you know, oh, you're a contest caller, until I was hosting TV shows and people saw that I knew how to, you know, successfully harvest birds. There was a big stigma there of the general public of, you're a contest caller. You know, you don't do that stuff out in the field. I spend just as much time brushing blinds, learning how to blow a duck call, targeting birds, traveling around. It is one small piece of the whole thing. And if I'm really good at blowing a duck call, you should see me brush a blind. You know, it's just one small thing that goes into it. So sure, I may be a semi-successful contest caller, but I'm not doing it because I like third place and second place trophies or first place trophies. Or, you know, if you're in it for money, you're going to be upset. But I do it because I love hunting, you know, and that just, it's an expression of what I'm willing to put in to the activity I love, being hunting. And, you know, it's just one small part of it. So contest callers, majority of them, you don't want to hunt next to on public ground because they'll take your lunch money. And it's not because of the calling. It's because the other 90% time and effort they put into having a successful hunt.
Amen to that. One of the things that I do remember when I first, that totally impressed me when I first met you is that, you know, I've heard good duck calling because we had a lot of good duck callers. I heard great Canada goose calling that. But one thing in Michigan, we didn't have speckle bellies. So that was kind of like a foreign animal to me when you heard that. When you've heard it, you're kind of like, whoa, what was that? And the first time I heard you on a speck call, I was like, oh my word, was that awesome.
And yeah, I feel the same way about people who can swan call and all this other stuff. I guess I understand where you're coming from, but for me, that's just what we had. That's all I knew. You know, I could blow a speck call before I could blow a duck call. Not that I'm the greatest in the world by any means. There's a ton of way better speck callers out there than me. But when I heard you blow a Canada goose call, I thought the same thing. It's like, what on earth would you do with that in South Louisiana? I mean, you would be really disappointed. But it's just really cool to meet people like you from different exact opposite part of the flyway that we were both in, you know, and your skill set made you successful, and my skill set made me successful down there on hunts. But there's definitely no overlap other than, you know, the pulling the trigger part. What we're aiming at is completely different. It's so cool to hear you say that.
Well, now that you've you're positioned with Hidgen, and you guys got an awesome TV show, and you're traveling around, and you've gotten now you've had the luxury, the blessing to be able to hunt a lot of different species of waterfowl. What would you consider, you know, today? I know you got your teeth worn in and hunting speckabellies and you hunted ducks, but you know, today, is that still the same? Is speck still your favorite? Has it kind of changed?
Honestly, if you'd asked me this question as early as 2 years ago, I'd probably have a different answer. But number one, the thing I like the most now, and like I'm this wise figure that I'm not, I like doing different stuff in different places with whether it's different people or not. It's the experience more now that I like to collect, you know, not necessarily how many of anything or what kind of anything, you know, like I love shooting Barrow's Goldeneye underneath a waterfall and, you know, in Pacific Northwest the last couple of years. It's been wonderful. You know, they don't taste great. You can only shoot, you know, two of them, but honestly, I don't know if I'd trade that for the world. But
wow.
I mean, I guess if I'm just looking at it big picture, if I could hop on a private jet tomorrow and go do anything, honestly, I'd still probably go speck hunting. It's hard to beat, you know, speck hunting with your buddies, with a small spread set up, just in a, you know, running traffic, not just to go shoot, to go work for some, and the challenge of shooting specks and communicating with specks still gets my attention. And I'd be more excited to wake up and do that than just about anything. And that's including standing next to a tree in flooded timber, shooting a pile of greenheads. I mean, it's what I am. I've cut my teeth on it for so long, I don't think I'll ever shake it. You know, they'll have to quit coming to anywhere near where I am for me to not want to go chase them.
You know, that's, I have to agree with that. You know, today I look back and you know, the years of hunting, and I've got quite a few under my belt, but I enjoy pretty much anything that can backflap, that I can call and backflap, you know, mallards in the timber, right, specks coming in, snows, a big funnel, you know, tunnel of snows coming down. But I'm like you, it's still, you know, it's kind of cool when I can get that group of big honkers that just kind of lock it up and glide right into the, and double clucking all the way into your feet there. It still gets the old heart going. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's hard to beat. Oh, and I mean, I can even compliment that. I mean, I'm sure I owe you a hunt anyway, so I need to take you on a speck hunt. But if I came on a Canada goose hunt with you, whether I had ever been or not, and that happened, I'd be just as fired up to see that happen, knowing that I'm not the one calling, but got to experience you doing what you love, calling those birds, deceiving those birds, them doing it picture perfect. I mean, it doesn't really matter what you're hunting when you can get that kind of response out of something, and you have the level of respect that a lot of people like you and I have for these animals. It doesn't really matter what it is or where you are. It's a chess game, and it's fun to watch no matter who's playing or what the pieces look like.
Well, I can tell you, man, I've never hunted with what I considered someone who was a spec, knowledge, or was a spec authoritative hunting specs. If I hunt with you and hunting specs, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to be that guy holding his gun, but I am going to be listening, my mouth shut, and listening to your guys' style of calling and how to work them. It's one of the things that we always talk about is it's about reading the birds fit first, you know? And real quick, before we get on talking about what you're doing now, speaking of spec hunting and duck, you know, is there any tips that all the years that you would like to, I'm sure our listeners listen in. And I know in Iowa and a lot of places, the speckabellies are starting to come here in droves, man. We're starting to see more specks than I've been out here 7 years. In the last 3 years, it just keeps increasing. And I would say this past year, in the early fall, in October and November, I would probably say that I saw almost, it was 50-50, the amount of speckabellies to the Canada geese.
I need to come hunt with you then.
Dude, my door is open. You know, we have the cabin open. It's a great place. We have writers, buyers, people come in. It'd be a great place to have you up there. We'd love to have the Hidgen team come up here and film.
Hey, we could make that happen.
But is there certain tips that you would, you know, certain tips that you would can give on speck calling and hunting specks?
Sure. So this is going to be somewhat long-winded, but I'll try my best to keep it short. I'm going to preface my next statement with this. Duck calling, Canada goose calling, and speck calling, they're all three different things. And anybody listening, you can probably relate to duck calling more than all of them. And we all know it's a duck call with a duck is an attention getter. You know, there's not a whole lot of influencing a duck. You can get its attention, but at the end of the day, it's going to come or it's not. You can't, you know, being a above average duck caller versus the best duck caller in the world, win is everything, and working birds is a little bit different. But when it comes time to actually influencing a mallard duck with a mallard duck call, you can only be so good and it help you. Now, Canada goose calling, the better you are, the more success you're going to have. You know, you take me Canada goose calling versus you Canada goose calling in the same field, same day, you're going to spank me. You know, that is what it is. And because calling is such a big aspect of it, speckle-belly goose calling is no different than Canada goose calling as far as the dynamic of being able to communicate with the birds is impactful. To this day, I don't consider myself the best speck caller in the world, but I know I'm probably in the top 20 percentile, you know, and I may be wrong, but I put my time in. You know, I'm not the best by any means, but I can run with some of the best as far as hunting goes. If I could learn how to blow a speck call 10% better between now and this season, I'll kill 10% more specks. Calling is everything when it comes to specks. It's not like duck calling. It's not an attention getter. If you can speck call and you have more tricks in your bag that you can keep giving them when you're working them, it's gonna give you a bigger dog in the fight. So anybody who ever asked me, I've seen some specks show up, and I have this conversation all the time with people because specks are showing up in new places now. What do I need to do? I bought a speck call. Learn how to blow it for 10 minutes straight. Learn how to do everything in a speck call. If you can, don't go buy a bunch more decoys. You've already got a couple dozen. Start there. And I'm a decoy. I work for a decoy company, so that should say something coming from me. Go get a speck call and become very efficient on a speck call. The better you are at calling specks and making speck sounds for long periods of time, the more success you're going to have. So that's my number one tip I give everybody just from a high level is get a spec call and spend 30 minutes a day learning how to blow it and get really good. And you're going to see that those specs that fly over that you saw finally show up once a week that would never look at you, all of a sudden they're looking at you now. And then the next time they fly by, they may be 10 feet away, feet down, back flapping in front of you. But a spec call in the hands of someone who's put the time in, you can make specs do some crazy stuff. As I'm sure you can compliment on this too, Mr. George, you can do the same thing with Canada geese. You know, if you're good enough on a Canada goose call, you put them in a Walmart parking lot, you know, and I can't do that, but you can.
Yeah. We've done that in the past.
Yeah,
I absolutely
get a spec call and become really good at it. And you're going to be happily surprised. The effort you put into being good on a spec call is going to come back in your grip and grin picture with you and your buddies.
Well, we talked, you hit a little bit on the decoys. Mm-hmm. How important, I mean, I know some of the misconception we have that will speckabellies work on Canada decoys, or do they work better you're with a decoy company, but is it really that important whether it's Canada decoys or speckabelly decoys if your calling's good and strong of finishing birds on the ground?
I think so, and this is my opinion. I'll start by saying that. So put your seatbelt on, but I've hunted specks from, you know, different provinces in Canada, Mississippi Flyaway, Central Flyaway, Pacific Flyaway, and what I've noticed is location does matter a lot. I mean, if you go down to South Louisiana and put out 3 dozen Canada goose decoys, and I've done it. Don't ask me why, but I was in high school, and it's what we had, and that's what we did. You can do it, but I don't think that's a secret. You know, it's not like you have to have spec decoys and you can't have Canada Goose decoys, but depending on where you are, if you match the field you're scouting, and a lot of times in these places, it's 90% Canada's, 10% specs, you know, at best, because specs are new for a lot of people. You're going to have great success if all you have is Canada Goose decoys. It's not a big deal because they're already following Canada geese around. They co-mingle. They're geese at the end of the day. And, yeah, they may not hang out right next to each other in fields, but they're going to the same field for the same reason. So it's not like it's a disadvantage. I would recommend people running spec decoys if they're truly targeting specs. If you're in a place where there's a lot of Canada geese and specs and you're hunting all of them, honestly, it's hard to say what's good and bad. It's really geologically desirable as far as what you're doing, but don't be scared to use Canada Goose decoys just to see if it's worth going investing in the spec spread, because it will work. And then again, being a really good spec caller, you can shoot them over swan decoys. You know, it's not like they're scared of other birds, but yeah, I mean, it's not a bad thing. It is important, but only at that last little 10% when they're finishing. Specs will land next to spec decoys, even among giant Canada goose spreads. Yeah, they'll work and you can shoot them at 40. That's great. But if you really want to finish specs and do it right, and in my opinion, even if you're running a big Canada spread, pushing specs out to a small part of your spread, and you'll see that specs will want to finish there. So I let the birds vote, and that's been my experience. Is spec decoys are important, and a little nugget I'll leave with everybody: if you are truly chasing specs, just go buy a few snow goose decoys. You know, they're the best confidence decoy in the world for specs. If you're not super fluent in spec calling and you've got some, even if you have spec decoys, you don't, they follow snow geese around, and it's almost cheating a lot of times. You can run a pretty small snow spread, and by small I mean, you know, 2 or 3 dozen in place of spec decoys, and a lot of times, honestly, they'll finish better over snows than they will their own species of decoy.
I have to agree with that, because, you know, we've been increasing. Well, this year we had a great population of snow geese in our area this year, and you definitely, yeah, you hear the snows and you hear the specs together. I mean, they were definitely, when you're talking about the specs, they kind of mix in with other birds. They really mix in with the snow geese a lot here. And when you look out in the field,
yeah,
you know, you're looking and there'll be specs mixed right in with all the snow sitting out in the field. And I like that tip, and I really... You know, guys are different between shooting them at 40 yards or shooting them at your feet, you know, get you a couple dozen specs. And basically, you want to put those in the killing hole where you want them to finish. And that's a great tip there. And I like that. Do you want to shoot them at 40? Or do you want to shoot them, you know, at your feet? That's a great tip. And
And look, I'm not better than, I don't shoot all my birds at 5 yards. You know, typically speaking, with what I do now with hunting with cameras a ton, of course we do, because we want to give the viewers the best hunt possible, and birds look a lot cooler on camera when they're really close. But I'm not above shooting them at 40, especially if it's a single or a pair. I mean, you got to do what you got to do, and at the end of the day, I'm not in a position to judge anybody's opinion of success on a hunt. So, you know, if you're hunting birds that don't want to be in the field you're in, but it's the field you've got, and your best bet is to shoot them at 40 or 50, you know, that's your thing. Run a snow spread, get some decoys, have them fly over. Don't just pass shoot them, of course. I'd never encourage that, but you know, you have to start somewhere, and there's nothing wrong with hunting your own hunt and engaging your own level of success.
You know, Brooke, that's a good point, and we all will shoot them at 40, and if, you know, because we're using the good guns, our guns are choked. And but one of the things I've tried to get up, I've noticed in some on social media, and there's a lot of great ammunition out there, some aftermarket ammunition. There's great stuff out there, and one of the things that I see a lot in the post and things, the guys are talking about reaching out and how they shoot them at a long range and can crumble them and stuff like that. And you know, and I my opinion on that, and I speak a lot of that, and I said, hey, there's nothing wrong, anything that can help me be better at what I'm doing, to me, 40 yards, anybody who's worth their salt and waterfowl and shooting, and you know, from 40 yards on in, should be a good kill. I think when you get past 40 and flying birds, then what you're doing, I think it drops to 50-50 and then drops as it keeps going further than that. And the point I'm talking about, when I get 40 yards and in and I'm shooting a good ammunition, if you practice and choked right, I mean, you should be dropping them dead. The point I'm saying is that when we start... You know, if you're using this good new ammo out there that they're using this stuff to help you at 40 yards and in, and it helps you, you know, with less cripples, dude, I support it all the more. But if you're using it to condone shooting birds at 60 and 70 yards, then my opinion on that is that you need to work more on your scouting, decoy placement, and your calling, and instead of your shooting. And my point is that sky busting is still sky busting, no matter what ammo you're shooting. And I think there's a fine line when we're educating the new hunters coming into the world of this, that this new market of ammo is great, but it still needs to have a control on it. It's like that pit bull on that leash. You still kind of, you know, that pit bull can go from 0 to 100 yards and eat everything in his way, but you still got to keep a leash on him. And, you know, we still, at the end of the day, we owe it to be, our ethics and morals and give him back to the resources that were been given.
Yeah, and that opens up a whole nother can of worms. And you know, I can only give my opinion, but I like working for it. I like winning, you know, and I like completely fooling the bird that I'm hunting, or really any animal. You know, it's about the game. You know, it's not, I don't really, I'll say this, and it's not, maybe not true, but I don't care if I shoot 100 or 1, there's a big difference there. And yeah, sure, I if I'm gauging my success on how many birds we got on camera, how many birds we harvested, of course 100 is better, but I'd rather shoot 1 at 10 yards than 100 at 100 yards. And even though I know I can do both, and quite honestly, shooting them further is a lot easier, but I didn't really have a romantic experience with that bird. I kind of lose respect for it. But the bigger problem is the next day when you go to hunt and you've shot into groups of 20 and 30 and only dropped 2 or 3 because you're shooting them far, not letting them work. What does that do for the hunters around you? What does that do for your hunt the next day? You're educating these birds, and you know, we're better hunters than we ever have been because we have more technology and more tools, and the average hunter is a better caller. And it's a big deal because the birds are changing. We're making them smarter. It's biology and science. I mean, it's survival of the fittest. And look at snow geese. Yeah, there's a bunch of them. They're hard to shoot, but it's because we kind of made them that way. You know, hunters have put enough pressure on these birds by doing things that are, you know, beneficial in the short term, but long term, it makes them harder to hunt. So it's a very, very sensitive topic with a lot of people, but I'm with you, Mr. George. The pros of truly working birds, enjoying that experience of communicating with the birds, shooting them up close, it by far outweighs the benefits of just shooting into some groups to scrap up a bad hunt, bad scout, bad skill set on calling, just so you don't get, you know, take home a goose egg with you, no pun intended. It's not worth it at the end of the day. You know, what'd you really learn? What was your success? You know, a picture for Instagram? Yeah, that's cool. You know, and I've done it too, but shoot one at 10 yards and tell me your smile's bigger than if you'd shoot one at 100, you know, lying.
Absolutely. The experience, you know, the feeling of self-worth that I accomplished something, you know, absolutely. And I agree with that. And one of the things that, and I believe it's guys like you and myself that we need to work and educate these young guys, because really, if they don't have someone leading or telling, you know, educating them about this, at least give them some food for thought on it. But I have the same theory that every picture I see when there's 12, 15 guys hunting and they got a pile of 75 to 80 birds of honkers or whatever, this whole pile of birds sitting there, I will almost guarantee you my bottom dollar that that many is probably crippled and died off somewhere else that is never retained and probably become coyote bait. And again, it's just stuff that we got to stop and think about. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't, and stuff like that doesn't help our numbers. And it does. The fancy calling and the hard calling and the shooting, like you said, the blasting and these big groups, man, I'm telling you, it's educating birds, and it is. You know, it's making it tough to hunt them more and more each year.
It's a non-renewable resource. You know, they're a live living organism, and they are adapting, whether it's where they go or how they go or what they do, based off of their environment around them. And humans play a big role in that. You know, you look around and you know, specs don't want to fly over a duck decoy spread in Arkansas. It's because every time they fly over a pit with 10 dozen duck decoys at it, they get shot at, you know, at 80 yards. And I don't blame them. You know, we've made them do that. So it's just something to think about. You know, it really is. And we could go on for hours about this, but it really isn't beneficial for the birds. It's not sustainable. We're just making them harder to hunt. And, you know, what's it worth? You know, I want, hopefully I'm blessed to have kids one day, and I have grandkids and great grandkids, and they get to do what they want. I don't know what kind of gun they're going to have to shoot at this rate, but it'll have to be three people holding it to shoot a speck at 600 yards, you know, with the amount of pressure we're putting on them at this rate, if we keep it up. So just something to think about. You know, it's not all about the numbers. It's about the experience, and doing it right, it's a whole lot more fun than just doing it.
Well, let's, I'd like to dig into Higdon a little bit. And, speaking with on our podcast and doing the seminars, one of the things I've been expressing to guys that, you know, that motion is so important today, but it has to be the right motion, and it has to look right. And you understand that these critters, they're not sitting at ground level looking in. They're from up above looking down. And, you know, I think you guys have really done a great, played a big role in the market and the motion and stuff. And can you give me a little bit about, you know, your role kind of with Higdon, but what is Higdon, you know, what have you got and what have you worked on? If you can kind of give us a little industry tips on ducks and snow geese, whatever, you know, your motion decoys.
Sure. So we've got, there's several categories of motion, and I'll just break them down, and we can talk about some products that are Higdon or non-Higdon products that fall into these categories. But you've got visual motion is what I call it. You know, let's just say visual motion is a spinning wing decoy, whether it's on a pole, like a, you know, mojo duck, or whether it's on the water, like our floating flasher, floating spinning wing decoy. That is a visual motion decoy. So that is made to be seen from a distance, and it's just a visual motion decoy. It's pretty self-explanatory. Then you've got water motion, which water motion is, you know, you're just adding motion to the spread. So whether that's like a swimming decoy, like our swimmers, or it's a pulsator, you know, a decoy that throws water up in the air, or a crazy kicker, like a, you know, it's got feet that throw splash water, you know, you're adding motion to the environment. Yeah, the decoy itself's moving, but you're putting ripple on the water. You're bringing your other static non-motion decoys to life because they're moving around a little bit. That's what I'd call water motion. You know, so you've got visual motion, you've got water motion, and there's different products that fall into those categories, and they're very different. So there's some motion decoys that spin and kick up water. Well, that's great. You're getting, you know, big bang for your buck. You're moving the water. You're spinning the spinning wing, and all that looks great. But it may not be the most realistic. So on that topic, we'll kind of segue into, it's hard to kill ducks over spinning wing decoy all season long if they've seen it a whole bunch. Birds get used to it. Spinning wing decoy, it's great. It's going to get birds' attention from a long ways away. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to want to land on top of it anymore like they did in the 80s. But it's better to have one and not need it than need it and not have it. I recommend anybody running a spinning wing decoy. I don't hunt with one that doesn't have a remote, whether I'm hunting in the fields or I'm hunting in timber or really anywhere. It's hard to stay away from it because it's such a good tool. I'd prefer to shoot ducks not over one, but a lot of times these birds are getting smart and they're tough and they're pressured and they've been around a while. It's pretty hard to not have one at your side, but I prefer water motion just because it's realistic. So like the pulsator that we make, is a duck butt with a bilge pump on the bottom that kicks up water. It looks like a duck feeding.
Oh, it's bad somewhat to the superficial. Bone.
Yeah, it's somewhat superficial. Because, I mean, I've seen ducks feed a lot harder than what our pulsator does as far as the amount of disruption it causes, throwing up water and everything. But it's not to a point where a duck's going to flare off of it. I've never seen a duck flare off of a pulsator. I've finished Canada geese and specks and snows over mallard drake pulsators. I mean, not that they won't. I've just personally never seen it. But it is what I would consider super realistic water motion, and ducks will never get used to that. It just looks like ducks feeding, and that's honestly what ducks are looking for a lot of times, especially on cold days where they're moving in and they're hungry. So you got water motion, you got visual motion, and you've got a lot of products in the gray area in between that kind of do both, but they're good at different things. So I like my water motion decoys to do two things. Number one, agitate the surface of the water. And even the subsurface of the water, making the water muddy, all that's really good. But the water is moving, and the birds, when they're flying above your blind, see that there's something going on in the water. So that your whole body of water you're hunting becomes a decoy. So it's not just 2, 10, 20 dozen floaters out there. All of a sudden now, your environment has been brought to life because the water's moving. And that must mean that there's a bunch of things moving in the water. So that, to me, is the most important motion decoy you can have, is making your environment look right. You know, whether that's, you know, running an ice blaster that just moves a lot of water, or muddying up the water, or hopefully it's really windy and you've got ripple on the water. It's a big deal. And then on the spinning wing decoy side, like I said, you know, it's great. You know, a lot of people can probably relate to this, but calling ducks on the corners, you know, you work them on the corners. You can do the same thing with a spinning wing decoy with a remote. You know, don't give it to them the whole time. Leave enough in your bag of tricks to give it to them. So that duck may tell you that it wants to come in with it spinning, or it may tell you it hates it, and then you can shut it off. But complementing your calling with the remote controlled spinner is a great way to deceive ducks and get ducks to finish, because you're controlling what that duck's seeing. And when you have more control, you can kind of pinpoint what the birds want. But there's some great stuff out there. There's a lot of water motion decoys out there that throw a lot of water in the air, and that becomes a visual motion aid, like a spinning wing, because when those droplets of water get hit by the sun, you know, that can be seen a whole lot further away than a spinning wing decoy. I've looked at countless of hours of drone footage, you know, with our filming our show, and I've noticed a lot of really key things, you know, whether it's shadows off of, you know, goose full bodies or goose silhouettes, or shadows off the back of layout blinds or A-frames or panel blind style blinds, or, you know, what I get to see what these birds are seeing. Not that we can see like birds, because we don't know exactly what they see, if it's in black and white, blue and green, or x-ray, but they know what's going on. They can probably see what we're doing a whole lot better than we can. And looking at all this drone footage of decoy spreads, the size of decoys, the shadows they cast, where you put them, how you put them, it's a big deal. And motion decoys are a great way to distract birds from things that you can't control, like your hide. You can only brush a blind in so much if you just have to be there. Or you can use it to your advantage of putting it where you want the birds to be. So everybody in the blind, if you're hunting, you know, a multi-person blind, you can drag those birds over across the spread, so everybody gets a shot in their clear lane in front of them. So motion decoys are a great thing. They're really good at deceiving birds because they're realistic. It's a sensitive topic with a lot of people, whether they should be legal or not, because they work so good. They can really help you out. And when it looks real, what's that saying? Walks like a duck, talks like a duck, must be a duck.
Must be a duck. Well, you got a couple great points there, buddy, and tips. I just want to point out to our listeners that, number one, you were talking about motion, you know, turning that spinning wing. I haven't really had anybody say that before, but it's totally what I was mentioning, flagging geese or flagging, you know, we flag at the sides, flag on the corners, and just give them enough. And usually, you know, and that was a great advice about that spinning wing, shutting that spinning wing off and then turn it back on and hitting those corners. And that is great advice. And the second one, I was just mentioning in the podcast the other day, that I like motion, but I don't want my whole spread in motion. And the motion to me is where I want to draw, you know, the duck or goose where I want their eye to go. And usually that's away from the hunters. And that's a great tip to let guy, hey, use that motion, not just to attract, but to attract a place that is away from the hunters being concealed. And that is
right. That
is awesome. And then the second, you know, any hunt club, any duck club or anything out there, it, you know, it's worth their salt. They got to have, you know, I think one of your ice eaters in late season, especially because you have that open water, you're going to have the birds in that late season when everything else freezes up. So that is a great tip. Is there anything we can talk about, or are you able to talk about then maybe in the future with Hidgen?
Yeah. So we're always working on new stuff here, and I don't think I've publicly spoke about this, or anyone here at Hidgen has, but I'll leave your listeners this little nugget. But we've been working very diligent on I'll call it a 2D style decoy for a long time. And by a long time, I mean 3-4 years. We didn't want to just do what everyone else is doing, and that's just not who Hidgen is. You know, we'd like to be innovative and bring quality to market. And I'm proud to say that, you know, we're very, very close to having a silhouette style decoy that is different than just about anything else out there. And silhouettes are becoming cool again. They've been used for decades before now, but you know, people have figured out that you can hunt in fields that otherwise you wouldn't shoot birds by running a bunch of decoys. And the easiest way to do that is a bunch of silhouettes that stack. And we're not naive to think that there's a better way to do that. So we're coming out with Silhouette Decoy. I can't tell you if it's going to be tomorrow or next year, but we're working on some really cool stuff that we've, you know, it's very innovative. It's all I'll say, but stay tuned because Higdon's getting in the 2D game and we're doing it in a big way.
Well, I'm telling you, to me, that 2D sounds like what's the missing link that silhouettes are missing. And what I say to a lot of the young guys out there, I mean, yeah, silhouettes have been around for 20 years. You know why we used them? Because we didn't have full bodies then. We used homemade silhouettes. Right. And when full bodies came along, you know, I'll never forget when we first started hunting with the first Bigfoots. Art Ladihoff came out with a Bigfoot. Man, we thought we died and went to heaven and pearly gates and full bodies. And then once, you know, everybody started using that, and absolutely the ducks and geese, they evolve and they start catching on. The dumb ones die, and I think they imprint onto the young, and they start learning. And so, you know, the silhouettes, you see the introduction of silhouettes coming back, and it's been strong. But when guys ask me about using silhouettes, I've always had the my comment and my theory is, well, what are you hunting? You know, if I'm hunting birds that are low approaching, early season geese, and I mean birds that come in and they're basically at a 1 degree, you know, they're at that certain degree of angle, a lower degree of angle, I should say, the success and not going over you and not, you know, is a lot better. If I'm having to deal with high flying birds, I think silhouettes can hurt me, and I think that you got to utilize a full body into the killing hole, at least where you want, you know, where the hunters are going to be, so you don't lose that attention of these birds. And, you know, especially later in the season when they've been hammered pretty hard on silhouettes and they get above and they see this disappearing, I think that this flag can go up. And that whether they think about it, it's instinctively their survival skill says, ah, this ain't good. And they don't have to think about it. They're out of there. They're just going to leave.
Yeah.
And I think the 2D, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, you know, and I've had the privilege of hunting over silhouettes a lot. And it's one great tool that hunters can utilize to increase their success in the field. But I mean that when I say it, it's just one of thousands of tools, you know, so it's I've never met one single bird that would finish better over a silhouette than it would a live bird. You know, they may finish just as good over that silhouette, but that's not because the silhouette. It's because of where you are in the birds you're hunting. So, you know, yes, it's if you have a great field, it's the best field in the world. All you've got to do is put out a dozen decoys. It doesn't matter what they are. They could be a tire, a silhouette, a full body, a stuffer. Of course, I'd say, yeah, you'd be crazy not to run silhouettes because you can put them in the back of your Toyota Prius. They cost half as much as full bodies, and they don't weigh a lot. They're easy to carry when you're walking through the mud. That's the thing that I think a lot of people are missing is they look at, and I sell decoys for a living, you know, so for what it's worth, I'm a less is more guy, keep it simple, stupid. A lot of times you can make mistakes by running too many decoys, in my opinion, but sometimes you just need a bunch of them, and more is better. But it's not the quick, simple fix of I've got to go buy an A-frame blind or a panel style blind, put it out there, and I've got to run 100 dozen silhouettes. You know, that may work for you. You may be in a spot where that just works great, but 5 dozen full bodies might have been just as effective, not cost as much, and been easier to put out, even though it's just everyone's thinking that it's all this wild success is because of silhouettes, but it's really just one tool. It's easy for people to run big numbers of decoys, but that doesn't mean that's all you should do. You know, my opinion, the perfect spread, if silhouettes are what you're going to use, is run some silhouettes. If you're going to run in traffic and you're not where the birds want to be and you're not on the X, run silhouettes, get the birds' attention, know the birds you're hunting, and then in the kill hole or upwind, use full bodies to drag those birds across.
Absolutely.
It's not going to hurt you. It's using multiple tools to your advantage is what it's all about and what works the best. So silhouettes became unpopular for a reason, and they're working now because people haven't been really using them for the last 30 years at the level they are now. But whether it's layout blind or panel or A-frame style blinds, all this stuff's cyclical. The birds we're hunting now are reacting well to it because they're not used to seeing it. Cut down calls are no different. Cut down calls have been around forever. They're cool now because it's something different.
It's something different.
Don't be scared to just mix some stuff around, do some different stuff. And silhouettes are a great, great way to achieve some things we want as hunters, like getting more birds' attention. But there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat. But silhouettes are a great tool, and they're a good product in my opinion. They've killed a lot of birds for a lot of people, so we're going to put our own spin on it, and we're going to join the game and be cool and do something innovative. And I can tell you it works. I've used them. So maybe hopefully it works for everybody else.
Well, I can't wait to see them. I'll tell you one of the things that, and not just young hunters, I've seen guys older, but I've hunted with quite a few young guys that, you know, they have three or four of their buddies. They all go together and they have one trailer, but they all went together, had all these decoys, bought the decoys. And every time they hunt, they have to use every decoy that's in that trailer they keep putting out. And I try to tell them, say, guys, you need to mix it up. You need to change. You know, I like to start with less is more. And like you were saying, and one of the people used to laugh, but it wasn't me either. Fred Zink used to say the same thing I did back in the day. And I lived next to two hunt clubs in my shop. But one of my favorite decoy spreads was 18 full bodies and did very well because everyone around me was, you know, using their whole trailers. And we use sporadic,
exactly right.
Try to be as goosey as can be, ducky as you can be, but as goosey as you can be, hit them on the wing, you know, on the sides and at the backs, be sporadic, you know when to turn it on, know when to shut it off, and then let them light down, feel comfortable. And that is a skill that still is, you know, needs to be learned. You don't, you're not born with it, you have to earn it. And, well, yeah. Tell you what, can you tell our listeners, what is Higdon's website?
HigdonOutdoors.com.
And where can they find the Higdon TV show?
So our TV show airs on Pursuit Channel and Wild TV, but we also post all the episodes on YouTube. So you can go on our Instagram at Higdon Outdoors, our Facebook, facebook.com/@Higdon Outdoors, or YouTube. You can access our YouTube pages, all of our episodes on the Higdon Outdoors website as well. So just go to Google, type in Higdon Outdoors TV, and you'll find it in a bunch of different places. It's not hard to find.
Well, Brooke, I know you and I know the guys there at Higdon are a bunch of good guys, and I can't wait to see. I know whatever you guys come out with is going to be extensively studied and used, and I can't wait to see it. I wish you the best with your new married bride. Tell Jennifer I said hi, and I appreciate your time, busy time. I know what you got to spend with us, and we feel humble with that, and I hope our listeners gained a lot of knowledge and experience through this. And again, we feel blessed. And all you guys out there, I hope you enjoy this. Remember to hunt safe, hunt smart, and may the good Lord be your guide.
Amen.